Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. I'm him. Check out the archives at scotthorton.org. I got more than 4,000 interviews now going back to 2003. scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there, iTunes and Stitcher and all of that. And follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. All right, introducing our good friend Andrew Coburn. And writing for Tom Dispatch this time. He's actually the Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. And his latest book is Kill Chain, The Rise of the High-Tech Assassins. As I say, this one is at tomdispatch.com, which means we'll be running it tomorrow on antiwar.com. It's called The Pentagon's Real Strategy. Welcome back to the show, Andrew. How are you, sir?
Hey, Scott. I'm good. Good to be with you.
Very happy to have you here. I like the way you start this. You quote John McCain, Anthony Kordsman, and even our friend Andrew Bacevich saying there is no strategy for what to do in the Middle East. If you'll suffer through this for me here for just a moment, Andrew, I have my favorite quote from the Kagan clan after the fall of Mosul and the declaration of the Islamic State. In the summer of 2014, the Institute for the Study of War put out a thing written, I think, primarily by Fred and his wife, Kimberly Kagan, where right there in the very introduction, where they call for the introduction of 25,000 combat troops to Iraq, they say, quote, it is impossible to articulate a clear path to the desired end state. Meaning they have absolutely no idea what to do or even how to come up with a line of BS that they think they could sell to Washington, D.C., for crying out loud. But you know what? Let's put 25,000 troops anyway in there and see what happens. How about that? But now you, in this article, you are saying, no, that is just wrong. These people have no idea what they're talking about. No surprise there about Fat Neck Fred, but it is just wrong to say they have no strategy. They sure do. What is it, Andrew?
The strategy is to keep the money flowing. I mean, maybe Kimberly and Fred are the useful idiots in this, but the general, you know, the military-industrial complex, as we, or military-industrial congressional complex, as we should properly call it, have always had a very clear and extremely successful strategy with a few blips, very few blips, which is to keep the money pouring through. You know, you can see that, you know, this manifests itself in various ways. Primarily, I always think, because they don't seem to be very interested in war, in finding effective ways of fighting. I mean, I cite in the piece, for example, the Air Force is busting a gut trying to get rid of the only really effective weapon they have for, you know, for these wars in the Middle East, which is, you know, the plane called the A-10, which is a close support, you know, ground support plane, which actually sort of works quite well, very well indeed. And so the Air Force wants to get rid of it because they want to pour all the money into this new long-range bomber they're about to build, going to cost us hundreds of billions of dollars, and this present disaster, which is the F-35. I mean, you can find examples up and down the military, but it, you know, it's clear that makes the strategy very clear. You know, get the money, spend the money, and you know, hey, if you want to, someone wants to, you want to go and kill some people, that's kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, you know, it really is something else. Just how upside down the whole system is. I mean, I learned about the term permanent war economy and sort of a cynical take on the Cold War and how unnecessary it was in its origins and all that kind of thing pretty young. But to get to the degree that you're talking about where, you know, they don't even really consider where the F-35, if we ever got in a real war with, you know, any actually equipped Air Force, our guys would be wiped out flying these turkeys. But
right.
They don't
well,
even really care about that.
Yeah, they don't. Actually, the only thing that might save lives is if the the plane, it's very hard to get it in the air. I heard recently that the Marines have a few now that they've declared operational, and only 14% are able to fly it, have been able to fly at any one time. So, that shows how bad it is, just to bear out your point there.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And then you talk about the minesweepers, and really the A-10 is the best example. I mean, mm-hmm. really, Andrew, you know what it is? You're asking the audience, or, their innocent mom who never considered how corrupt it could all be, to imagine a system of corruption that's beyond their imagination and in their own country. I mean, you're basically saying that the guys, the generals that run the Air Force, they don't care if U.S. Army infantry and Marines on the ground get shot to death. They would rather throw the A-10 on the scrap pile, replace it with a plane that cannot do the same work whatsoever, for their own financial interests. I mean, it sounds like you're talking about the level of cynicism and corruption that one would expect from some third world kleptocratic hellhole, not a limited constitutional republic where they do all this fighting to keep us free.
That's right. I mean, it's pretty, the implications are pretty staggering. I mean, we've got this now, this huge corrupt system, which, gets worse. And think about it, the defense, you see various figures for the defense budget, but if you throw everything in, I mean, Winslow Wheeler of the Center for Defense Information did this calculation, we basically spend $1 trillion a year on the military establishment one way or another, including, the nuclear weapons, which belongs to the Department of Energy, and everything else, veterans benefits. It's $1 trillion a year, and we really don't get much defense out of it. That's the kind of, you think at least if you have a huge defense establishment, it'd be nice to get some defense out of it. But we don't, they don't really do a very good job at that because they don't really care.
Well, it's a monopoly. Lousy service, right. High prices. That's how they go.
Exactly. It's exactly so.
Well, now let me ask you this. The Russians have an economy the size of Manhattan Island, not even New York State, right? They cut their budget, and in an apparent signal that they don't want to play this brinksmanship game with us right now because they know they can't compete with us, on the spending levels and that kind of thing. The old days are long gone, and as you have shown us, even the old days were never what they were cracked up to be in terms of Soviet military capacity. But I got a thing in my imagination where I think, wait a minute, maybe there are people in charge of the Russian military who have an incentive structure that's quite different than ours that possibly, I mean, they got a monopoly too. Maybe I'm an idiot here, Andrew. But maybe they have an incentive structure that could emphasize performance on the question of something like their new generation fighter jet. We are not going to tolerate F-35 level nonsense here. We actually want a stealthy jet that's fast and can climb and can turn and can shoot and fly in the rain and do all the things the F-35 cannot do. And I just wonder, is there any like real good head-to-head estimate of their newest fighter jets versus ours, and whether they actually mean business in the usual sense of that term, as opposed to business, the way you're writing about it here?
Well, I wouldn't get too overexcited about that. They, my feeling is they would be building an F-35 if they could afford it. They, the Russian, I don't think in the old days of the Soviet Union, I mean, the Russian Soviet defense complex was kind of a mirror image of ours in a more sort of even more tattered state. And then that sort of basically fell apart. So they basically rebuilt the Russian military, and it's better than it was. That's no doubt about that. But, their newest fighters, they're not that great. They really, I'd see no sign of them. If they were building, I don't want to sound like a cracked record here about the A-10, but if they were building an A-10, if they had built an A-10, I'd think, oh, they're serious. But, I don't see them heading down a radically different path from ours. It's just as you say, they've got an economy the size of Manhattan, so there's not that much they can do compared with the old days.
Yeah. Well, and although I wonder, pound for pound, dollar for dollar, their newest jets have got to compare, you know, better right. the F-35 on that, although that may be meaningless at the end of the day. It seems to me...
One advantage they have is they don't have that much money.
So, right, yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to get at here, was like, this is all we got, and we really need a jet that works. And so instead of just padding a bunch of corporate executives' bank accounts, maybe we could focus on trying to develop an airplane. I think we talked before about that video interview of the designer of the F-16 and 15 saying that he and his buddies at Lockheed secretly designed the F-16 without letting the bosses know because they wanted to develop a jet that would actually be worth a damn. And the bosses wanted to waste a bunch of money on the F-15, which was the F-35 of its day.
Right. That's not nearly as bad as the F-35, but that's basically what happened. I mean, there was a group called, in its day, the Fighter Mafia, who basically, more or less in secret, sort of maneuvered through the F-16, which was quite an effective plane, but that's an exception. The other one was the A-10, as a matter of interest, but that's the exception. Only rarely does groups like that come along, and it's getting harder and harder and more rare all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you saw this headline a couple of weeks ago where one of these generals told Congress that, yeah, well, you know what, you guys are right. The F-35 is never going to be able to provide close ground support. So now what we want to do is design an entirely new plane to replace the A-10.
Right.
Damn it, we're throwing those A-10s in the garbage, we swear to God.
Yeah, although don't read too much into that, because what they really want to do is head off someone making them do that. They say that, but there's been no sign of them actually being serious about it.
Mm. All right, now, I guess, can you tell us real quick about just the scam of the bow wave here and how they build in the modernization programs and all that?
Sure. I mean, it usually happens, I say in this article, usually what happens is when there's, you have a war, something like, the so-called war on terror before that, going back to Vietnam, the budget climbs to huge heights because, hey, we're fighting a war. Then the war comes to an end and tapers off and there's a crisis, a budget crisis for the military. So while they accept very grudgingly very, very small cuts, and they get smaller all the time, every time this happens, they meanwhile lay down a bunch of programs, research and development programs, which don't look that expensive at the moment, but lock in huge budget bills later down the road. That's what's happening now. They call it the bow wave, and we're ensuring that in about 10 years' time, or maybe even sooner, suddenly the military is going to turn around and say, oh my God, we're underfunded. We're in the middle of building this, that, and the other thing, and we're going to have to cancel them unless you, the Congress, the taxpayer, give us a pot more money.
Right.
And it's a very common, you can really see it's like a sort of wave. Well, it's the bow wave. That's what they call it.
Yeah. Well, it was a 50-50 shot of whether I was going to pronounce that right. I should have gone with the boating term there. All right, I'll let you go. Thanks so much for your time, Andrew. Really appreciate it as always.
Hey,
I know you're in a rush.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, y'all. That is the great Andrew Coburn. He's the author of a hell of a lot of very important books about American foreign policy, et cetera, going back quite a few years. He is Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. And, of course, he's the brother of Patrick Coburn, our good friend, the war reporter. His latest book is Kill Chain, The Rise of the High-Tech Assassins. And you can find this article, The Pentagon's Real Strategy, Keep the Money Flowing, at tomdispatch.com, and we'll run it tomorrow at antiwar.com. Scott Horton Show, 4,000 interview archives there at scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there, iTunes, Stitcher, and all of that. Follow me, help support at scotthorton.org/donate, and follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Thanks, y'all. This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
President John F. Kennedy was assassinated more than 50 years ago. Questions still persist to this day. Why did the Secret Service threaten deadly force against the Dallas medical examiner? Why did a Navy official testify that the official autopsy photographs were not the ones she developed during the weekend of the assassination? Explore these questions and more in Jacob Hornberger's best-selling ebook, The Kennedy Autopsy, published by the Future of Freedom Foundation. Buy it today for only $2.99 on Amazon.com. The Kennedy Autopsy by Jacob Hornberger.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today.